And so to ways we can save billions, both on the farm and at your GP's surgery. Antibiotics. About 80% of antibiotics in America are given to farm animals, just supposedly to make them grow. At your doctor's surgery, prescriptions may be written for drugs you don't need. This report from Claire Watson begins with Professor Antoine van Oyn, one of Australia's top scientists in the molecular field at the University of Wollongong.
Thanks for joining us again on The Science Show, Antoine.
My pleasure, thank you.
What is the typical lifespan of a new antibiotic now, from discovery to resistance, and how has that changed over time?
So when penicillin was first introduced to the market right around the Second World War, it took already then only 10 or 20 years for people to see the first resistant bugs out in the community. And now the most recent new antibiotics that have been introduced to the market, resistance is found within 2 or 3 years already. So the lesson there is, if we come up with a new drug within a year or two, we will see resistance in bacteria.
And yet so much research goes into finding those new drugs. Usually we would find you staring down a microscope looking at antibiotic resistance as it develops in a matter of hours, but you've recently embarked on a population study. So why are you taking this approach and why now?
Yeah, so that's right. So I'm by background somebody who's interested in the molecules in the cells and trying to understand about the molecular pathways that lead to antimicrobial resistance. And we started doing these experiments where I was literally shaken to the core almost as a scientist, seeing under the microscope that bacteria gain resistance within hours once exposed to just the right conditions. And that made me think about how this would work in the community. And surprisingly, when you start to talk to the experts and read the literature, we hardly know what are the drivers that cause resistance in the community. There's a lot of factors involved that we all know about and read about in the media, like overuse of antibiotics in agricultural industry, like overprescription by primary care physicians, but we have no good quantitative data. So we started looking at the regional community here in the Illawarra, south of Sydney, surrounding Wollongong, as an extremely stable population that is geographically confined between an escarpment on the western side and the ocean on the eastern side, knowing that that population is pretty immobile. And started to think about setting up a study where we use this stable population and try to really understand what is going on in the community.
So how are you going to measure that spread of resistance?
So we're trying to understand the dynamics that are at play between the GPs and the patients, in particular to patients coming into the GP's office with a cold or with an actual, for example, upper respiratory tract infection, then seeing how these patients would like to have antibiotics in some cases, how GPs respond to that, knowing the pretty strict prescription guidelines that are in place, and seeing whether there is indeed such a thing as overprescription, and trying to get access to prescription data and trying to correlate that to pathology data to find direct relationships between prescription on the one hand and rise or incidence of antimicrobial resistant infections on the other. So it's a large data gathering and linkage effort that involves getting a lot of stakeholders around the table, the primary healthcare people, the pathology people, the pharmacists, and the local health district, and a lot of parties.
You mentioned education for patients approaching their doctors. Where else do we need to see fast action on this? Do we need it at a policy level as well?
Yes, we do. So we hope with this study to get access to hard data that then would drive not only interventions that we can put into place to see how we can make things better regionally, but also those efforts would directly inform policy, where hopefully our findings can be transposed onto other regions, not only within the country, but overall in the world, where we hope to be able to find data that directly find its way onto the policymakers' tables.
Do you have any suggestions there of how this is being tackled at an international level?
That's a really great question. There's more and more evidence that we need to think about antimicrobial resistance not as a mechanism of resistant bugs traveling around, but how genes on pieces of DNA travel around. It turns out that a lot of these antimicrobial resistant genes are little bits and pieces of DNA in bacteria that are traveling around between bacteria. So when you think about global travel and people flying in planes from A to B and bringing infections with them, we really need to change our thinking about this from an antimicrobial resistance gene point of view. And that may sound like a subtle difference for your listeners, but it's a really important difference in terms of designing the detection mechanisms that you have to track how these genes on pieces of DNA travel around the world.
So the bacteria are sharing their secrets.
Absolutely. The bacteria are sharing their information. We tend to jokingly call this bacterial sex. That makes bacteria share DNA between them, and that's actually a major cause of the transfer and the travel of antimicrobial resistance among bacterial species.
It sounds frightening, and I suppose what I would like to know is then what we can do as individuals.
I tend to look at this antimicrobial resistance in the community debate as a individualism versus common good proposition, meaning that if we as patients go to the doctors and we have the sniffles, we then tend to expect from the GP to get antibiotics, while we may not even need it. It may be a viral infection, it may disappear on its own. So we need to think about this at a common good level, making really well-informed decisions about needing antibiotics or not, realizing that the more antibiotics we use as patients, the higher the risk is that other people may fall victim to antimicrobial resistant infections.
So the antibiotic resistant bugs might form in us, but then travel elsewhere, move around the globe, and exacerbate this problem.
Exactly. So the lesson out of all of this, I think, is already that, look, if we end up at the GP and the GP is telling us you really don't need the antibiotic, it may cure yourself tomorrow, but it may have consequences down the road for other people. The lesson is listen to your GP and walk away with the sniffles, take a good day off and come back.
And in the meantime, public education goes a long way.
Absolutely. One of the things that we want to do is roll out public awareness campaigns that will take place, for example, in the GP's waiting office, that will take place in primary school settings, in high school settings. And that, I think, is already a good starting point. That is, to be honest, something that we already see happening around us. So you see already a lot of campaigns, especially in the GP's office, in the pharmacists, warning people against thinking too easily about asking for antibiotics. So this is an effort that is already going on a full swing and that we definitely want to contribute to.
Well, all the best for the rest of the study.
Thank you.
Equally important is getting back to basics, things like sanitation and hygiene to prevent the spread of infection. Dr. Martina Sanderson-Smith is a microbiologist at the Illawarra Health and Medical Research Institute, where she studies Streptococcus, the bug that causes strep throat. Mild reoccurring infections are common, and her team has been looking at why some people are more susceptible to streptococcal infections than others. The answer, it seems, is on our blood cells. This is promising because it opens the door to a non-antibiotic treatment, which would alleviate the pressure to use antibiotics for common reoccurring childhood infections. Now, the question that you started with was why some people are more susceptible to streptococcal infections than others. So how did you translate that question in the lab and what did you discover there?
Because we know that some people seem to be more likely to get recurring group A strep infections than others, we decided to look at not just what the bacteria were doing, but also at what some of the differences between those individuals who were getting infections might be. So we wanted to look at what was happening at the surface of human cells that the bacteria were attaching them to. And so that was what led us to looking at the glycans, or the sugar structures that are at the surface of these cells.
And why are those glycans so interesting?
We think that they're really interesting because they decorate the surface of all cells, and there are key differences between individuals in the types and the number of glycans that are displayed. So most people would be familiar with the idea of blood typing, and you know that you are type A, type B, or type O. So this is actually based on the type of those sugar structures that are found on the surface of your red blood cells. But they're not only on your red blood cells. On 80% of the population, these sugars are also found on the surface of the cells in your throat that group A strep typically use to attach to or to hold on to when they're first causing infection.
And your idea from there is to target that link that the bacteria latch onto and hopefully stop infections?
Right. So the idea is that if we can come up with essentially something that mimics the sugar structure that the bacteria are recognising, instead of holding on to the cells in the throat, the bacteria will actually latch on to those sugars that are floating around and they won't be able to attach to the cells. So it'll effectively block that very early stage of interaction.
Why should we be so concerned about such a common bug when thinking about antibiotic resistance?
Group A strep infections, whilst typically mild, can lead to much more severe infections. You can get what are known as post-infection sequelae, which is where your immune response attacks your own tissue. And so for this reason, if people have recurrent group A strep infections, they're often given multiple doses of antibiotics. Now, group A strep are not resistant to antibiotics yet, but that administration of antibiotics plays a bigger role in contributing to the problem of antibiotic prescription. So what we'd like to do is come up with a way that we could minimise the number of courses of antibiotics that somebody who has a recurrent infection has to have over the course of their life.
Can you explain how antibiotic resistance typically develops?
Generally, what happens is that because antibiotics kill the bacteria, that puts a pressure on them to evolve in such a way that they can avoid being killed. And they can do that by picking up new genetic material or by getting mutations in their own genetic material. The approach that we would propose to use is not actually going to kill the bacteria, so it removes that pressure on them to evolve in such a way to develop resistance. And so hopefully this would be one way to alleviate the pressure of antimicrobial resistance.
So what's next from here?
In the first part of this work, we looked specifically at those sugars that were associated with blood type. What we're now really interested in doing is looking at all the different sugars that are present on the surface of the cells and seeing exactly which ones of those are important in this interaction. Because if we can narrow down what it is that we're looking at, then what we'd like to start doing is making sugar cocktails that we can trial to see if they can block the attachment of bacteria to these cells.
And would it be a matter of identifying the suitable patient that would respond to this type of treatment?
Ideally, what we'd be able to do is develop something that could be given out quite easily to people because we'd have a really good understanding of specifically which people were at risk of recurrent infection and what treatment was needed to target that.
And can you take us through some of the other alternatives to antibiotics that are currently in development?
In terms of bacterial infections, there's a lot of fantastic research being done around Australia in particular. For group A strep specifically, there's teams working on vaccine development, and they're making some really good headway in developing vaccines that will hopefully be able to reduce the global burden of group A strep infection. And another really promising area of research is looking at how we can take our own immune response and boost it in some way so that we can better control and clear infection. So being able to team up our own immune defences with other treatments to try and come up with a better strategy.
So these vaccines would prompt our immune system to respond in a better way to bacterial infections?
Yeah, so the idea would be that you could somehow train your immune system to recognise and clear these infections more quickly.
And in the same way that your glycan mimetic could block infections and alleviate the pressure to use antibiotics, vaccines could be used within an at-risk population and reduce antibiotic use as well, perhaps?
Yes, the ultimate goal would be to make sure that we could control infection where it was most needed whilst reducing unnecessary antibiotic prescription.
Dr. Martina Sanderson-Smith explaining how common bugs drive antibiotic resistance. She followed Professor Antoine Van Ooyen, also of the University of Wollongong.
And thanks to Claire Watson.